Joining me in a studio, DA leader, DA party leader, Musi Mamani. Thank you for getting up so early and for joining us.
Good morning and shalom to all our listeners and our great citizens of our country. And it's great to be here. It's my great privilege.
Thank you. So the first thing, the first observation that I would like to make and get your feelings on it is that one gets a sense that this election, this is our sixth election as a democracy in South Africa, one gets the sense that we're voting as adults for the very first time. By that I mean that we understand that we all love rainbows, but there's been a little bit of a storm, and maybe we, as South Africans, we've had to walk through a storm in order to see what this to get to a place where the sun shines just a little bit. But the last couple of years have forced South Africans to grow up. We can't delude ourselves anymore as to what the nature of politics has been in South Africa.
Yeah.
Do you get the sense as well that this election is different to the other elections in that the type of questions we're asking, the analysis of various parties, the different approaches, is happening at a more adult level?
I think more than anything, this election is a referendum about the future of South Africa, more than anything. I think for the first time, we have come face to face with what type of society do we want to build. You know, in 1994, we had an opportunity to come together as a nation and almost begin a step towards building this one South Africa. And through that, we had mistrials of governance and bad governance. Now the question that we've got on the table is that if you were to fast forward South Africa 5-10 years from now, what kind of country do you want to live in? And I think the electorate, broadly speaking, suddenly have taken over the cloak. They've removed the cloak of liberation. They're saying, yeah, at first we must be liberated. Now we must liberate ourselves from the liberators.
Right.
And secondly, I think in a country where 10 million citizens are unemployed, there's a significant level of people who are agitated. So more than anything, I think it's about a referendum about that future. And I certainly get excited about that conversation because for the first time, we can't just talk about one man or talk about corruption. We actually have to talk about how we create those jobs. How do we make sure we build one South Africa for all, a country upon which citizens have got work? And I think this is the best opportunity for us to do it now. And I think South Africa needs reform. It needs change. And I think it's a really important election. It probably, more than anything, if I was to define it, is one of the most important elections we'll ever host as a country.
Well, that's certainly my belief. And as I say, because I think people are interrogating the situation very, very differently. And, of course, all the research is showing that the very issue that you've just mentioned, which is economic progress, which is job security, is the number one issue. And there's a lot of noise being made about land reform, and I'm not saying it's unimportant. It is important for anyone who's been disenfranchised. But at the same time, the number one issue across the board is about the economy, because without that, we can do nothing.
It is always about jobs, stupid, as former President Bill Clinton once said as his campaign mantra. But, you know, when you truly interrogate what the numbers look like, 40% of households in our country don't have a single income going into them. They depend on remittances. They depend on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
4 out of 10 adults don't work. 50% of our young people cannot find a job. I mean, and the longer they remain unemployed, the more they become unemployable.
Of course.
We have an economy that's growing at 0.8%. And I have a plan that says, how do we get our economy growing at least 3% in the medium term and then 5% in the long term? Because at first, what we've got to do is decentralize our economy. We can't keep state-owned enterprises the way they are. We hold on to things like SAA. It means taxpayers have to finance that. And we can't invest in our economy. I'm of the complete view that cities must play a central role in economic development. I believe more than anything, we must be able to reduce tax on manufacturing so that people can make things and do that. And I'm of the complete view that if we target particular industries, whether it be agriculture, manufacturing, tourism, we can be able to stimulate our economy to a point at which it can be to the benefit of all. I'm animated by one simple dream. I want a job in every home. I really do. I actually wake up every morning and I think, how best can we put a job in every home? Because once you have a home with an income coming into it, you then suddenly are able to exercise choices and exercise freedom. I am of the complete view that unless we address that question about how do we include more citizens into our economy, there will be no peace, and there should be no peace. If we want peace in our country, we want a prosperous nation, it requires all of us, regardless of faith, regardless of background, to work together to build this economy that's inclusive. That's the only vision that we must be animated around.
There's been a tremendous amount of divisiveness with regard to South African politics. You know, we've seen that with Jacob Zuma, the white monopoly capital story. We've seen Julius Malema, who grew up on the knee of Jacob Zuma, has continued along to divide the country along racial lines. We're seeing it even so as near as yesterday when Cyril Ramaphosa meets with, I think it, he used the word white interest,
white counterparts.
When do you think we're going to be able to move on from that? And do you think that there are still very difficult conversations that we need to have as South Africans?
Of course, there always will be. We have a history that is deeply painful. But I think the mistake we make is the proposal that says equal rights or human rights are like a pie. That when you give rights to someone, you have to take rights away from someone, which is incorrect. It's why I think the DA, for me, needs to succeed in these elections. Not because I'm the leader of the DA, but for as far as I can tell, when I look at lists, when I can look at all the messaging that comes out, we're the only party that truly represents all South Africans, black, white, Indian, colored. We're the only party that, regardless of your faith, we will fight to protect your rights. That's why our entire election is about one South Africa for all. I don't think South Africa is unique in racial divisions or
Definitely
divisions
not.
Of any kind.
Of course not.
I think we are seeing a rise of nationalism all over the world, and that has its own implications. It means a group of people will seek to oppress another group. We're seeing Brexit. We're seeing all of these divisive tools that are coming on board. That's why the cause is far bigger than just what happens here. My frustration with these elections is that as our economy is struggling, there are parties that are rising up and creating lagers for racial groups. So on one end, you've got an Afrikaner-dominated grouping that says, vote for us because we'll defend Afrikanerdom. On another end, you've got parties that say, vote for us because we'll defend black interests or black people, EFF, ANC. It is crucial that we occupy that central space, because frankly, when South Africans work together, we actually do thrive. We've created industries, and I think we need to celebrate the diversity of our people. Liberation movements, and this is a point that I would like to make here. Liberation movements, which the ANC is one, have to always convince the electorate that the electorate needs to be liberated.
They have interesting to That's a very interesting point.
They have to keep telling people you have to be liberated from
some oppression,
some class. That's why they can't let go of the concept of racial oppression, because it feeds the electoral process.
Do you think that that is one of the reasons that the DA is constantly accused of being a white person's party? It's this mantra that we're hearing over and over again, when it's very, very clearly not the case. But somehow that is the allegation.
If you keep the fear of racial oppression alive, then you envision the sense that says to your electorate, we are the only ones who can liberate you.
Right.
That's why the ANC will keep banging on about that. And frankly, today it's about white South Africans. Tomorrow it will be about something else. It will be another nationalism.
You've seen Julius Malema attacking the Indian community.
Correct.
You know, we've seen that, and we are. That is a huge concern. When you have any form of racial attack. I've been critical of the DA in terms of their campaigning. I felt very often that the DA relied on negative campaigning rather than positive campaigning. My sense was that when we're sitting in the dark, we know full well while we're sitting in the dock. We'd only be reminded that it was the ANC. We know it. We, as South Africans, we get it very, very clearly. Do you think that looking at how your election campaign has gone thus far, do you think that you've called it right, or could you have done it a little bit differently? And I'll give you another example. Is for me, the slogan "Vote DA to keep the lights on" is tragic. Like, it's sad. It makes me want to weep because it doesn't inspire me with hope. It just, in fact, inspires me with hopelessness. You know, rather than saying "Vote DA." To, you know, be a shining light, or take it into a positive, not a negative. What's your comment on that?
I think an election cycle has got multiple elements to it. And I think, you know, that's one iteration in a world where South Africans found themselves in the midst of load shedding.
Right.
But frankly, when we opened a campaign, it's always been about one South Africa for.
Right.
It's been the ambition, it's been the dream.
So if I had to ask you your slogan, because there's multiple slogans.
And I'll give them to you right now.
Right.
The first one has always been one South Africa for all. The second one has been, we want to put a job in every home.
Right.
We want to secure our borders.
Right.
We want honest and professional police service. And we want to make sure that we root out corruption out of our society in order to build that country where all citizens can thrive together. It's in those simple terms.
And those are very simple wishes.
That's the thing that we wake up to fight for every day.
Mm.
And the ambition for one South Africa for all isn't just a question of a kumbaya moment where people hold hands.
Right.
It is about building that inclusive economy for all. Putting a job in every home has been something.
How do you do that?
Well, as I've described, put a job in every home. You got to make sure that micro enterprises thrive and make sure that at least in every household, one individual can be able to find a job. So we need growth in the economy, but we furthermore need to allow small businesses are the only people who are creating jobs in our country.
Entrepreneurs. And in fact, we don't support entrepreneurs.
And if we could find a jobs and justice fund that is able to fund small businesses so that more people can find work, that's the way we put a job in every home. But I've also said furthermore, the DA, when it comes into power, I want to introduce a national civilian service where we can spend 1 year, and in that year, young people are able to work for 6 months as interns and work for 6 months in its training. We will pay them throughout that year, but what we want is to give them the dignity of work. One of the things that, at least as an experience, if you look at what Israel do in and of themselves, it's a country that is facing different threats. But that military experience allows people, young people from different sectors of life, an opportunity to share values and contribute to the country. Now, South Africa, under apartheid, they use that for military purposes. And I'm saying we don't need that now. What we need is young people who, and we've targeted this, 78,000 of them can get a 6 month internship program and a 6 month learning experience. And in that year, they can contribute to our nation in key sectors of education, criminal justice, and ultimately healthcare, so that young people get the dignity of work. So for me, there are multiple programs that we've looked at that we're saying we can put a job in every home. Because when I come back even to the Western Cape, unemployment is declining. More than anything, we're the only party in this country where we're in government, jobs are being created. In Joburg, Tshwane alone, 90% of the jobs created in Gauteng were created in those two metros. Over 100,000 jobs were added just in the last 2 years of this administration. So we are the party for jobs. And I think South Africans, when they go forward, when we look at this election, in summary, if I could sum it up in one way, it's one South Africa for all. We put a job in every home. That's it.
Right. You mentioned Israel. We've noticed, and certainly a lot of the messaging that we're getting from our Jewish listeners, and just so you know, our demographic is around about 50-50 in terms of Jewish or not Jewish.
Yeah.
But we do talk a lot about Israel, obviously, on the show. You've been to Israel. In fact, you were severely, I think, very, very unfairly dealt with by the South African press, to the point that I think that your trip to Israel was a personal mistake, even though you went because you chose to go, and you're fully entitled to do that. Yet somehow there seems to be skepticism amongst the Jewish community as to your stance on Israel. Can you give us your clear view on what your policy is?
For us, we think that the solution that at least we all agree on is a two-state solution in the Middle East.
Right.
We're of the complete view that if the state of Palestine must exist, then the state of Israel must exist. I think that South Africa, without trying to pay lip service to everyone, has had bilateral relations with Israel.
Mm.
We need to be able to, if we give legitimacy and support for the fact that the state can exist independently, I don't support things like boycotts. I don't support things like sanctions.
Downgrade of an embassy?
I don't support that because I think it goes against the very solution that's on the table of a two-state solution.
Absolutely.
And more than anything, we need to be able to allow the space upon which trade can occur, as I would argue the case if the Palestinians
Absolutely.
Or the Palestinian Authority would have trade with South Africa, they should be able to do so.
Absolutely.
And so should we do with Israel. And there's been incredible technology. So to me, I don't at all, even in that trip, I went to both sides. I'd seen both sides of the argument. And even as I stand here today, don't for one moment regret the trip, because I realized that just like I get persecuted for being in a party with South Africans of different colors and trying to build this one South Africa for all, there's always somebody who's going to persecute you to drive a particular agenda to persecute you therefore. And that's why often when I think about President Ramaphosa, I would hope more than anything he would have the courage of conviction to say, you can't stand up for a two-state solution and then in the same breath downgrade Absolutely. Israel's diplomatic ties, and then furthermore pursue a different course of action. I think as South Africans, we need to take leaders at their words, and we need to stand up strongly for the things that we believe in, regardless of how unpopular or how difficult they may be.
Which is exactly the issue, and unfortunately, the incredible focus on Israel is also a tactic that's been used to divert attention away from our own backyard, which is in a horrible state.
And again, liberation movements, if you keep driving the fact that, I mean, in the way the ANC would frame the Israel-Palestine conflict, they frame it in the same way as apartheid.
Absolutely.
So as to remind citizens so that they can mask their own failings in our country. We need to be alive to these things. Because if we're being willing to be sincere, I think we need to look at the Middle East in its broader view. I'm amazed that the South African government isn't taking a stronger stance against countries like Syria. I think there are citizens who are being killed in different parts of the world, and we need to take a stronger stance. We have diplomatic responsibility to follow Nelson Mandela's example, which says that we must fight for human rights all over the world, and our foreign policy must be based on that. It would feel that the ANC's foreign policy model is based still on the 1990s or the existence of the Berlin Wall. We've got to get to a point now where we appoint leaders who can be future-focused rather than retrospective.
Well, quite frankly, our representation at the United Nations is embarrassing. You know, we're standing on the wrong side of almost every discussion in the international arena.
Undeniably. And every time I ask President Ramaphosa or the ANC about this question of foreign policy, it becomes very clear that liberation movements will stick together to a point where they'll support Maduro
Absolutely.
In Venezuela, who has taken the country to the brink of absolute collapse.
Mm.
We've stood with countries that do not support human rights.
Cuba.
We here in South Africa, in Africa, allowed Omar al-Bashir to exit our shores without any accountability, a man wanted for genocide. So, our dream is that we restore that credibility of South Africa. We know what it's like to come from a painful background. We know what it's like to bring people together. It's one of the toughest things about my job, which is bringing South Africans from different walks of life together, but it is the greatest privilege of my job, is to work to build that nation, because to your earlier point, it's not just about Rainbow Nation. It's about the fact that I speak to South African business people who I say to them, let's work hard to achieve the redress, the inclusive South Africa that
Absolutely.
We want. And I think we're better together rather than simply being divided into racial corners. And believe you me, whatever people might say, in 5 years' time, if the ANC is still in power, we will still be having the same discussion, because they will mask economic failure, because their policies are simply not going to deliver economic prosperity in this country.
And I know that we have to be sensitive to time. There was initially, at the beginning of this whole campaign, there was certainly a move that I was sensing that because people were responding well to what Cyril Ramaphosa was saying, that there was almost a swing growing, and people were saying, well, hold on a minute, maybe the ANC can reform itself. When they put out their list, it became very, very evident that it's the same rogues in the same position. What happens moving forward, in your view, if you have this incredible tension within the ANC? Maybe it isn't even a tension, but you've got all these fantastic words of rooting out corruption, and we have seen some measure. We've certainly seen the NPA moving in the right direction. We've seen SARS. We slowly are seeing these enterprises or these law enforcement agencies improving. But at the same time, if you have these same rogues in Parliament, we're going to land up exactly where we started. What do you think? How do you play this out?
Howard, this is a very crucial question that you've put. Because I think South Africans, we've lived through years of corruption.
Mm.
We've almost started to believe that our only problem is corruption.
Okay,
that's
interesting.
Not true.
Right.
And so that's why when we see moves in the NPA, we think finally we're making progress. But frankly, that's like rewarding a fish for swimming. In truth, what South Africa needs is two things. It needs political reform. And political reform says that, I know as tough as it is for many people, they say the ANC needs a stronger mandate. No, it doesn't. Actually, the ANC, even without having to have a need for a mandate, are already implementing EFF policy. They want to nationalize the Reserve Bank. They want to nationalize all of that. And I think we need to bring that change. And if you want, actually, on the day of elections, you must ask yourself this question. If Mr. Ramaphosa has to form a coalition, who would you rather he calls? Would you rather on the other end of that phone call is Mr. Malema, or would you rather he would work with people in the DA who believe in a market-based economy, who believe in non-racialism, who believe in constitutionalism, the rule of law?
Would you consider that?
And I think that is the conversation we need to have.
Mm.
The second issue that I'd like to say is we need economic reform. We cannot be stuck with a state-led economic development. It is unworkable. It is not going to deliver. So whether Mr. Ramaphosa cleans out, if you like, these people who are corrupt, which frankly, there's no evidence that he's ever going to do that. He was there for 5 years. I'm not convinced he'll be able to have the courage enough to reform our economy so that it actually creates the jobs. And so if we need to drive a reform agenda, we actually need to reduce the ANC's majority so that we can reform not only politically, but economically. This idea that actually Mr. Ramaphosa alone, it's very clear. I saw it at State of the Nation address. He'd make one announcement 1 week. His party would rebuke him. Next week, he'd correct that. Mr. Mbeki had a two-thirds majority, and the ANC recalled him. So let's not suggest that suddenly increasing someone's numbers puts them safe.
No, for sure not. Right.
So my stance here is that let's build a new coalition in South Africa. Let's put a best people government in place, and let's ensure that actually we can reform our politics and reform our economy. That's the only future we have, and I'm willing to speak to anyone who upholds those values of non-racialism, of constitutionalism, so that we take this country forward. We've got to move the people who are racially polarizing to the fringes so that the center, which is where 80% of our citizens sit, can work together so that we build a prosperous country. It's the only way. But believe you me, the suggestion that suddenly the ANC must grow to change is a bit like rewarding people who have looted and stolen our country for 5 years, and then we say, well, let's give them more votes. Do you think there'll be less looting after that?
Very, very interesting and very, very important indeed. Lots and lots of questions, lots and lots of comments. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to most of them. What I have done is try to incorporate them in my question. But the one thing that I am seeing a lot of, and I know that you do have to get going, but I'm seeing a lot of questions from our listeners about education.
Yeah.
A tremendous amount of concern about the state of education in South Africa. What is the DA's policy?
Yeah, it's a deep passion of mine. Mm. I mean, the reason our education fails is multifactorial. And I want to say, let me tell you, we have a policy called From Cradle to Career.
Mm.
Let me tell you a story of a child and say, what do I want for a child born in South Africa today? Before we get them in the classroom, let's make sure that child has something to eat. Child grants at this point in time sit at 400 rands. And frankly, when you go to other provinces, one in four children die because of malnutrition. when you get to grade one, those kids, 26% of our kids are stunted because they've got nothing to eat. How do you expect that child to learn if they're coming from a context of poverty? So the birth of a child must say to all of us, let's make sure each of our kids, no child goes to bed hungry. And we can do that. We have the means to do that. The second is that once a child hits the age of three, we must put better ECD centers, because it doesn't matter. If the child doesn't learn to read or comprehend what they're doing in the first 4 years of their lives, they are not going to make it through school. Those are the basic facts. So I'm calling to say, let's give ECD centers, let's make those compulsory, make those free, so that actually more kids get the best education from there. At grade one level to the primary school phase, let's stop the unions from having power over teachers and give our kids the best start. We know that once our kids are able to not only learn in schools that have got good infrastructure and not dying in pit latrines, we know that if our teachers are present in the classroom and have a full day of teaching, we can, by the time we get to grade four, get kids who can read, write, and understand what is going on. Before we discuss free higher education, let's talk about pre-primary school. Let's talk about primary school, because once those foundations are in place, those kids can make a choice. So for me, I want reform in education. The other thing I want to say is that we've been experimenting extensively with collaboration schools. And collaboration schools is when the private sector and the public sector partner together so that kids who are poor can get the quality of private school education. We will finance the land, put the bricks and mortar on the table. The private sector will finance the teachers and make sure the kids get there. And if we can create that partnership, we can give kids, particularly black kids, kids who are left out, the best education this country can offer. That's the reform.
An important question as well is, and I'm also getting quite a few messages about that, if the ANC goes below a majority, i.e. 47%, isn't the EFF a danger if they get together with them?
Not at all. I think that more than anything, if the ANC was to get below 47%, if they're serious about policies that they want to advance, and if Mr. Ramaphosa still remains in place, it would be improbable or unlikely for him to want to work with the EFF. He needs to work with us. And we need to grow, because unless we believe in a non-racial future, we believe in a constitutional future, then we can work together. But I think people mustn't fear that. Fellow South Africans, you know, we've never lived in a world that is post-ANC. We've never lived in a post-liberation era. We have to get there.
Well, it's always a challenge, as you've alluded to a number of times, is for any liberation or a party to become a ruling party, a leader. It's by definition, it's one of the most, historically, we've seen this in every country in the world almost. It's very difficult to make that transition. Because as you've rightfully said, it's been the success of the organization, so it's very tempting not to let go of it. So a couple of messages, somebody's telling me it's the last morning they're ever listening to Chai. I'm sorry to hear that. That is because of, your remarks on gays and gay marriages. I'm not aware of those at all. Do you have any idea what he's talking about?
I'm not certain. My stance has always been that South Africans and citizens who are gay, who are lesbian, have rights, and their rights are protected in the Constitution. So I'm not sure which rights.
Right.
Which
I also have absolutely no idea. The only reason that I even read that is because this person I see is getting very, very, very worked up. All right. And I do know that I've got to be respectful of your time. I really do appreciate you coming into studio. I want to remind listeners as well that you're going to be speaking under the auspices of Chief Rabbi Warren Goldstein, Dr. Warren Goldstein. That's going to be on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon.
At the Sandton Shul.
Yeah.
And I think that should be really, really fantastic. It's very important, I think, that people educate themselves, actually understand it. My one sense that I'm getting is that, and I'm a bit of a mad social media person, I think that the DA gets an incredibly difficult, a very tough rep on social media. I think that it's a constant, it's a a constant battle that it's almost disproportionate in terms of the negative focus that you receive. And I think it's very, very important for people to make educated decisions. Go out there and just make sure that you understand exactly what is real and what is not real, especially when you look at social media, when you look at some of the commentaries. And it doesn't mean that you can't and you shouldn't be critical of every party, because it's something that I keep saying. We don't live in this binary world. We'd all love to that everybody, you know, this party is perfect and that party is imperfect, good versus evil. It really, really isn't that. There's challenges and there's imperfection, and I would hope that perfection is no longer even an aspiration. So do go out and educate yourself. Make sure that you know exactly what it is that you're voting for, who it is that you're voting for, and what those policies are that underscore it. And I think it is certainly from my point of view, really, really greatly appreciate you coming into studio, taking the time and speaking to us.
Yeah, it's my great privilege. And I think to your point, you know, social media has become the streets where often hatred is spewed. When I go on the ground and I speak to people, South Africans are hopeful. I'm hopeful of our country. I'm hopeful of the future of our country. South Africans know that people were writing us off between 1990 and 1994, mm-hmm. but those were the seedbeds of change, as much as they're doing it today. They're saying, look, you guys are not going to get it right. Moody's have got a ratings and all sorts of things like that. I happen to be one who says, these may be the best and the worst days of South Africa. They may very well be tough. But together, I think as a country, if we pull together, we can be able to see the next number of years. And we ought not to fear. We ought not to fear now, where we think to ourselves the winds of change are blowing. We ought not to fear. We ought to be courageous, because we have been before. And you know, if I celebrate anything, it's the fact that regardless of how it is, South Africans are incredible. They're incredible business people. When I think about what happens at Discovery, when I think about some of the banks that have been started, when I think about that, I think our people have shown innovation. And therefore, if we can demonstrate the same, there's no reason why this country cannot be prosperous. There's no reason why we can't put a job in every home. And there's no reason why we can't build one South Africa for all. So I certainly look forward to engaging South Africans on Sunday and sharing a dream that I hold for this country. And I would hope that more than anything, that disinformation isn't what makes us decide what our future is, but that in fact we get into a space where we can say, what do we need to do for our nation to make it a prosperous one?
And that's where we leave it. Time is 7:40. I'm Howard Feldman. I've been chatting to Musi Mamani, the head of the DA.